let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening.
So, this is going to be a bit of a weird episode. I've got a couple things on this episode that I want to talk about. They're both space-related, because I was scrolling Twitter today, and I found a sound that is terrifying. NASA has revealed what black holes sound like, and it makes me uncomfortable in like the best way possible. Like, we are a few years out from having our first actual images of what a black hole looks like, that very blurry kind of sunspot with a black dot in the center. It's a very blurry photo, but like, we're looking millions and millions of kilometers away. We're looking light years away. And this just continues to continue and progress. Full disclosure, I am super obsessed with space. I love space so much. If I were able to, you know, go to space and come back, I would. It does not scare me, even though it is like the most terrifying thing. I actually find the ocean more terrifying than space. Maybe just me. But I actually have my phone background right now. My phone background is one of the high-resolution images we got from the James Webb Space Telescope. It's the one... and don't worry, my girlfriend knows about this. It is no longer a picture of her. It is a picture of space. It is the one where you see it's the contrast of blue and gold. It's the Golden Nebula with the blue behind it. That is my phone background. And I look at it every time I look at my phone and I think, oh man, space is so beautiful. And that's actually something I want to talk about in the second part of this episode. But first, we're going to talk about what a black hole sounds like. And it is perfect horror movie material. If they do a space horror, I mean, they're going to do another one, but this would be a great sound for like space ghosts. Brace yourself. I'm going to play it. Just fair warning. Here is what a black hole sounds like. Thank you. So that's a thing. That is what a black hole sounds like. And I'm not going to sleep tonight. Just kidding. I am going to sleep. That was a really cool sound. And it's really cool. We know what a black hole sounds like. This is really great. This is like my, this is 8-year-old me freaking out and being super excited because he's like, oh, we know what a black hole sounds like. Ah. So here's a little breakdown of what you just heard. You actually heard a specific sound. You heard a sound from a black hole in the Perseus Galaxy cluster. That is a cluster of, more specifically, you heard a black hole within a giant gas cloud. So the Perseus Galaxy cluster is this 11 million light year wide bundle of galaxies that are shrouded by hot gas. It is, you know, if you think about the Sol system, the solar system, which is our sun is Sol, and the system is the solar system. It is a void of nothing, essentially. It is, you know, radiation and other things and other debris, but for the most part, our galaxy is nothing. It is empty space with kind of moons and clouds and clusters of asteroids interspersed within it. But we are part of the Milky Way galaxy, which is a massive galaxy or massive cluster of these systems. And you can actually see the Milky Way. You can view it in the sky. It's actually a band of light, this like hazy band of light. It's made up of stars that can't be distinguished by the human eye. You need a telescope to be able to see individual stars in it, but it's this hazy line because we are looking out at the horizontal slice of that galaxy. And you when you look at it, it's tilted slightly. It's a diagonal line because the Earth is technically tilted. The Earth isn't on a straight, you know, 0-degree axis vertically. It's actually tilted. So we see the line of the galaxy as it's basically, if you look out at the horizon, it's a flat line, a horizontal line, which is the horizon. We're essentially, if you look at the Milky Way galaxy, you're looking at the horizon of the galaxy, the straight line horizon. And it is like a three-dimensional space. You can move up and down in it. But it is that horizontal line that we sit in. Like everything is compacted into this line. But what the Perseus galaxy cluster is a different one of that. For the most part, the Milky Way galaxy is these nebula and galaxies, and it's fairly empty. It's just light. This is a bundle of gas. The Perseus galaxy cluster is effectively a giant gas cloud, and that's how scientists were able to capture the sound of the black hole. Now, I'm going to get complicated, and I'm going to be saying a lot of things, and it might not make a lot of sense, but bear with me. I'm going to try and explain it as best I can. Sound travels in waves. Basic, like elementary, high school level physics. Sound is why you get sound waves. I'm looking at waveforms right now on my recording software. You get sound travels in waves. But sound travels through, sound needs to vibrate off of things. So sound is effectively vibrations that we internalize as auditory stimuli. So the vibrations hit our eardrum, and those vibrations get translated by our brain into our perception of sounds. And sounds occur, and sounds travel by vibrating and bouncing off of things. So you're hearing me talk, but it's the sound being projected, the sound waves being projected out of a speaker, which is projecting electrical impulses in a format that is able, you are able to hear, or your brain, it's auditory, it's a electrical, or it's a signal that your brain is able to pick up as sound, and it's projecting out. You know, the speaker that you're listening on, or the headphones you're listening on, are translating that signal, that electrical impulse, into a signal that is auditory. So it's pushing out these sound waves that are vibrating and bouncing off of the atoms between you and the speaker, and then it hits your body and wraps in, and it goes into your ears. Kind of like how when you're standing next to a large speaker and there's bass booming out of it, you can feel the sound. You can, the vibrations, or the waves that are being projected by the speaker are actually vibrating the air. They are so powerful. They are pushing against the atoms in the air and pushing things towards you, so you can feel it. So the fact that space is a vacuum largely means that there's nothing to vibrate off of. So we can't just know if there's a black hole that's just sitting in the vacuum of space, we can't hear it because the sounds that it's emitting don't travel far beyond it, because there's no medium for the sound to travel through. It's just the black void nothingness of space where nothing exists. The fact that this black hole exists in the Perseus galaxy cluster, which is just gas, which is, you know, is at a molecular level matter, allows the sounds from this black hole to vibrate against and bounce off of the gas. So the gas around the black hole made it possible to capture its unique sound. The sound of the black hole can't get beyond the space sound vacuum because it's so close to all the gas. But what it does, what the scientists were able to focus on, were the ripples in the hot gas. Think about how the classic example in Jurassic Park, where there was the cup on the dash of the Jeep, and there were these perfect concentric rings. Whenever the T-Rex would step, there'd be a little ripple, or a couple little ripples. That is sound displacing into a medium. And if you recorded what those impulses were, what those waveforms of the ripples were, you'd be able to reverse engineer an approximation of the sound. Fun fact, the way that they did that was they ran a guitar string under the dashboard of the car to the bottom of the cup, and when the steps were actually someone plucking this guitar string and causing a vibration to create the ripple. So what scientists did essentially was pick up these through NASA's equipment, pick up the ripples of this hot gas, and they scaled it so we could hear the sound of the black hole. They basically recreated what the black holes sound like. This is a quote from NASA. The sound waves are being heard 144 quadrillion and 288 quadrillion times higher than their original frequency, which means it's much, much quieter than what you would normally hear. This is from an article that where they wrote about this. NASA tweeted the sound clip of what the black hole sounds like, scaled up for our little ears, and it's a beautiful, haunting sound that seems very fitting for a thriller or horror movie. Now, of course, it's not possible to know if this is precisely what the black hole sounds like, since it's so enhanced, but it's really, really cool. And that's true. We don't know if this, we can reasonably surmise that this is not exactly what it sounds like. If you were to be close to the black hole, you would hear it a lot better, but also you'd be under the effects of time dilation, and, you know, years would be passing for every second that you're near that thing. But you'd be able to hear what a black hole sounds like up close. This is the best we've got. It's a recreation pitched up so we can actually hear it, because our bodies can't hear anything else. So that is one of the space-related stories that I wanted to talk about today. There's another one that came up today. I'm recording this on Monday. You're getting this, like, fresh off the press. You're getting this as soon as I am, like, I'm just reacting to this as you're listening or as I'm recording. We have new images of Jupiter, and this is what I assume being able to see sound looks like. I did not know this, but Jupiter has an aurora haze, and I'll explain what that is in a second. I'm going to leave a link to the NASA blog on this in the show notes, but you know how Earth has aurora borealis? I actually took a picture of this recently when I was at the lake. We were out there and we saw the entire sky go green with like hints of red and orange and pinks because we got to see the aurora borealis in like very vivid detail. Jupiter also has that because Jupiter has an electromagnetic field, which is cool. And I'm looking at this image right now, and it is blowing my mind because it's so much like it is the aurora borealis turned up to 11. It is this green kind of ghostly haze over the top, like top and bottom quarters of Jupiter with these orange flares at the top and bottom. This is wild. I'm going to read directly from the NASA blog. With giant storms, powerful winds, auroras, and extreme temperature and pressure conditions, Jupiter has a lot going on. Now, NASA's James Webb Space Telescope has captured new images of the planet. Webb's Jupiter observations will give scientists even more clues to Jupiter's inner life. Quote, we had really expected this, hadn't really expected it to be this good, to be honest, said planetary astronomer Imke DePater. Professor Emerita out of the University of California, Berkeley. DePater led the observation of Jupiter with Terry Fouchette, a professor at the Paris Observatory, as part of an international collaboration for Webb's early release science program. Webb itself is an international mission led by NASA with its partner ESA, the European Space Agency, and CSA, the Canadian Space Agency. Quote, it's really remarkable that we can see details on Jupiter together with its rings, tiny satellites, and even galaxies in one image. The two images come from the observatory's near-infrared camera, the NIR cam, which has three specialized infrared filters that showcase details of the planet. Since infrared light is invisible to the human eye, the light has been mapped onto the visible spectrum. Generally, the longest wavelengths appear redder and the shortest wavelengths were shown as more blue. Scientists collaborated with citizen scientist Judy Schmidt to translate the Webb data into images. In the standalone view of Jupiter, created from a composite of several images from Webb, auroras extend to high altitudes above both the northern and southern poles of Jupiter. The auroras shine in a filter that is mapped to redder colors, which also highlights light reflected from lower clouds and upper hazes. A different filter, mapped to yellows and greens, shows hazes swirling around the north and southern poles. A third filter, mapped to blues, showcases light that is reflected from a deeper main cloud. The Great Red Spot, a famous storm so big it could swallow Earth, appears white in these views, as do other clouds because they are reflecting a lot of sunlight. Quote, the brightness here indicates high altitude, so the Red Spot has high altitude hazes, as does the equatorial region, said Heidi Hommel, Webb interdisciplinary scientist for solar system observations and vice president for science at Aura. Quote, the numerous bright white spots and streaks are likely very high altitude cloud tops of condensed convective storms. By contrast, dark ribbons north of the equatorial region have little cloud cover. Oh, this is so cool. This is so cool. It is I mean, you've all seen the big red spot Jupiter in images that show in the visible spectrum, just observe the straight up observations of the color and light reflected off of Jupiter, show it to be kind of an orangey tannish color for the most part. And then the big red storm, which is bigger than the planet Earth. That one storm which moves around the planet is bigger than our planet, the one we live on. And something that I didn't know is that Jupiter has a ring. It's a very, it has a couple rings, but they are very faint. It's not like Saturn or Neptune where they are much larger and easier to see. These are very faint rings. They are rings of asteroid material that are, you know, floating around the planet. But with these new images, you can see them fairly well, along with the hazes, that the northern and southern auroras, which are caused by electromagnetic radiation. So back to the article. In a wide field view, Webb sees Jupiter with its faint rings, which are a million times fainter than the planet, and two tiny moons called Amalthea and Adrastea. The fuzzy spots in the lower background are likely galaxies photobombing, in quotes, this Jovian view. Quote, this one image sums up the science of our Jupiter system program, which studies the dynamics and chemistry of Jupiter itself, its rings, and its satellite system, Fauchet said. Researchers have already begun analyzing Webb data to get new science results about other about our solar system's largest planet. And this is just like an explanation of how this stuff kind of works. This is from the article. Data from telescopes like Webb doesn't arrive on Earth neatly packaged. Instead, it contains information about the brightness of the light on Webb's detectors. This information arrives at the Space Telescope Science Institute, Webb's Mission and Science Operations Center, as raw data. STSCI processes the data into calibrated files for scientific analysis and delivers it to the Mikulski Archive for Space Telescopes for dissemination. Scientists then translate that information into images like these during the course of their research. While a team at STCI formally processes web images for official release, non-professional astronomers known as citizen scientists often dive into the public data archive to retrieve and process images. You could do this yourself. So Judy Schmidt of Modesto, California, a longtime image processor in the citizen science community, processed these new views of Jupiter. For the image that includes the tiny satellites, she collaborated with Ricardo Hueso, a co-investigator on these observations, who studies planetary atmospheres at the University of the Basque Country in Spain. Schmidt has no formal educational background in astronomy, but 10 years ago, an ESA contest sparked her insatiable passion for image processing. The Hubble's Hidden Treasures competition invited the public to find new gems in Hubble data. Out of nearly 3,000 submissions, Schmidt took home third place for an image of a newborn star. Since the ESA contest, she's been working on Hubble and other telescope data as a hobby. Quote, something about it just stuck with me and I can't stop, she said. I could spend hours and hours every day. Her love of astronomy images led her to process images of nebula, globular clusters, stellar nurseries, and more spectacular cosmic objects. Her guiding philosophy is, quote, I try to get it to look natural, even if it's not anything close to what your eye can see. And that's just a great example of somebody with an absolute passion for what they're doing. These, you know, citizen scientists are doing this in their free time. A lot of them aren't, you know, classically trained. They don't have PhDs. They're, you know, people like you and me. I know nothing about space imaging and the physics of how a lot of this works. I couldn't tell you. But I just find it incredibly interesting. And these people have a passion that they're willing to put their time and energy into doing things like this. And it's the amazing thing about science is that it brings so many people together and people working towards a common goal. You've got, you know, millions of people around the world working with this data to try and draw observations from it and show things. You know, people often get lost in the idea that scientific discoveries and things like this should have some, you know, manifest purpose, you know, to like everything should have a one-to-one connection to some like new technology, new product, new innovation that changes our lives and heals the sick and helps us with flying cars and things like that. But that's just not how this kind of science works. Science is incremental. It is summative. It builds up, it builds upon what comes before. And, you know, there are in the future going to be developments and technologies and approaches and things that will change our lives and new things that will come about that will really change humanity for the good. But we need to lay that groundwork with stuff like this. You know, knowing, going back to the start of the episode, knowing what a black hole sounds like, not going to like change the world. It's not going to, you know, it's not an idea that's going to make billions of dollars. But it's not about the money. It's about the fact that it's a thing in our universe that we now understand. We have now put another piece of the puzzle together that is our understanding of our universe and of the reality that we live in. And it's, you know, another tangential piece that somebody else will be able to use to build off of and build in a different direction. Same thing, you know, these new images of Jupiter that I've been talking about for the last few minutes, you know, this isn't gonna, you know, make millions of dollars. It's not going to lead to a new technology that you will be able to use tomorrow. But it's important to understanding, you know, certain things about how light and gravity and gases and imaging works. It's a step towards something greater, and it is still like I learned something from this. I now know that there are auroras on Jupiter. Do they operate the same way that the aurora borealis does on planet Earth? Does it look the same? Does it act the same? Is there some other thing that's causing it? Is there something that we can see that might, you know, have a hold a possibility for our planet or future planets? You know, these types of things do matter. This type of, it may seem like science for science's sake, but it's still important. You know, NASA has contributed so many amazing things to our day-to-day life that you take for granted now. And it all comes from stuff like this, like cursory, like strange little observations that didn't lead to some like capitalistic gain were the things that helped us get to the moon. And getting to the moon led to us having internet and led to GPS and led to satellites and so many other things. The space race produced so much technology that we use every single day. You would not have the cell phone that you have. You would not be able to use Google Maps. You would not be able to stream things without the space race and without scientific discoveries as inane as this. I'm just super excited because I love space so much. But thank you very, very much for listening. If you're listening live at 101.5 UM FM, keep that dial to 101.5. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. This has been Let's Talk About. I've been Jason. You've been the audience. Thank you very, very much for listening. And as always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe, everybody. And look at these pictures.